Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Almost Famous. This is part two of my interview with the very, very funny Angela Barnes, star of Mock the Week, host of the News Quiz on Radio 4. And yeah, she's a brilliant, brilliant guest. So please keep listening. And thanks again. Cheers. I'm interested, tend to ask this a lot as well. How much of, you've mentioned it a little bit, but how much of what people see when they're watching you perform is the real you, and how much of it is a persona that you've adopted for the stage?
I think it is me. I think it's the me that I sort of wish I was a bit more in life. So I always say my onstage persona, she's a lot more ballsy than I am. And she will say things that, you know, I feel safe saying into a microphone in front of hundreds of people that I wouldn't necessarily say to one other person in a room, you know. Because I always say, when people come to my tour shows and things, and then afterwards they want to meet you, and I always think, oh God, I'm going to be such a letdown, because they think they're going to meet this this brassy, and what they're actually going to meet is a slightly twitchy, nervy woman going, hello, thank you for coming to my show. You know, because I'm just... I'm quite shy in some ways, and have quite a lot of anxiety about meeting new people. And then people say, well, how can you get up on a stage? And I always say, well, when I'm on a stage, it's always my turn to talk, right? There's no awkwardness. I know that. I've got a microphone. It's my show. It's always my turn to talk. So I feel safe. Whereas in a one-to-one situation, I get awkward and go, have I talked too much? Have I not talked enough? Have I, you know, and all those sort of insecurities come out. Whereas, so I think she is me. She exaggerates sometimes, and she you know, embellishes stories a little bit sometimes, but, and she's definitely got more of a potty mouth than I have on day-to-day life, but yeah, she is me, really.
And you've said that you come from a family of pessimists and you've been accused of being world weary. Is that really you? And if so, how does that affect the material you write? Is that what you naturally go towards?
Well, apparently so. That's one of those things, like when you talk about persona, I never sat down and went, right, this is the sort of comedian I'm going to be. When you start out, you just write what you can write, you know. And I only really found out what sort of comic I was when people started reviewing things that I was doing, you know, like Edinburgh shows or gigs or whatever. And they'd be like, and the same two phrases came up. It was like world weary, self-deprecating. And I was like, oh, I guess that's what I am then. You know, so it was never like, oh, that's what I'm going to set out to be. You just go, oh, I guess that there must be something in me that is those things. And I think I am one of life's, I always say it's better to be a pessimist because then you're never disappointed, you know. I always think if you're, and once genuinely Ramesh Ranganathan once said to me, because we started out together as open spots in Brighton. And I remember him saying to me once, your glass isn't just half empty. He said, you smashed it on a table and cut yourself with it. Now, when Ramesh says that to you, like the most miserable man in comedy, it does make you think, oh, maybe I have got a slightly negative outlook. And that's why I did the show Rose Tinted that I did, was sort of trying to look on the bright side of life a bit more. But actually, I, you know, it served me all right to be cautious and a bit cynical and a bit wary. You know, I think you can't. I'm always happy when things go well. I'm always delighted. Oh. I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, we've touched a little bit upon things slowly moving in the right direction for women in comedy. I'm assuming you've been in a lot of writers' rooms for kind of radio, certainly, and TV, places that are kind of known for being boys' clubs down the years. Have you noticed, you know, any quickening of the change in terms of that stuff? Is it still really hard to get into those places? Is it still a boys' club, basically?
I'd say it's changed a lot just in the last 4 years. You know, even from when the first TV series I did was Stand Up for the Week, and that was a very male environment. There were a couple of women in the writers' rooms, and there was me, and then there were tens of boys involved, you know. Whereas now I find, like on the news quiz, for example, we are often equal, if not more, women than men on the panel, and same in the writers' room. Right. I'd say it's really balanced, and that's great to see. I mean, that was great when I was doing Newsjack on Radio 4, which is the open source, you know, so anyone can send stuff in. And we're just getting great stuff from women at home. Thinking, why aren't these people getting their foot in the doors? And the thing is, you know, a lot of comedy you've seen on the telly for many years was written by the same 10 people, you know, and they were generally men. And so it just took a while, you know, it's like with anything, it just takes a while for the people who are, say maybe 10 years ago, there was a real movement. When I started doing stand-up, there was a lot of women started at around the same time as me. And now we're getting to the point where we're the ones on telly, you know. Yeah. So, and similarly in writing, there's a lot of women now who are getting into the writers' rooms. And so in 10 years' time, I think it will be 50-50 pretty much. Because, you know, as those people that are just starting out now get to the top of their game, that I think the balance is coming. And it's that thing as well of you got to see it to be it. You know, when I was growing up, there weren't many women doing comedy on telly. You had Victoria Wood, you had Jo Brand, you had Jenny Eclair, you had Joan
French
Ripley.
And Saunders.
You had French and Saunders. But, you know, compared to the amount of men doing it, they just weren't. Whereas now, you know, it's pretty evenly distributed now, and you've got people like Catherine Ryan and Sarah Pascoe and Sarah Millican who are just paving the way for the next generation. And now I go to I go to Jill Edwards runs her course twice a year, and I always go and do a Q&A with them.
Brilliant.
Because it's where I started, and I feel a lot of, you know, love for that course, and I go and speak to the students, and then I MC their end of course show thing that they do, and I'd say there's easily as many women doing it as men now, easily, if not more.
Brilliant.
Which
you're
is
a trailblazer,
great.
Angela, you're helping with that stuff.
I don't know if I am. I think the trailblazers are your Millicans, your Pascos, your, you know, they went and said, right, fuck this, we're showing them, you know. And now people are used to seeing us on the telly, so it's not such a shock, you know. Whereas 10 years ago, it's like, oh, woman on Mock the Week, what?
Yeah,
she'll be shit, you know. And it's difficult, because if you look at a YouTube clip of a male comic dying on stage, right, all the comments underneath will be about how shit that comic is. If you go to a YouTube clip of a female comic dying on stage, all the comments will be that women are shit at comedy. So every time you went on stage or on a panel show, you had the reputation of all women in comedy on your shoulders, not just yourself you were responsible for. Whereas nobody's ever gone, you know, when a man has a bad gig, nobody's ever gone, God, men are shit at comedy, aren't they? That just doesn't happen. And that's a lot of pressure to put on someone who's just starting out. You know, that every time you go on stage, every time you go on TV, every time you go on radio, that's the whole of your gender is being judged.
And you've actually talked quite openly about how social media criticism has affected you. And, you know, that's a great example of it. The pressure that you feel that puts on you even before you've started, let alone, you know, the comments afterwards. How do you deal with that?
Generally speaking, I ignore trolls and things on Twitter, because that way madness lies. You know, I never go searching my name on Twitter. I never do anything like that. What I have started doing recently, I've got a little strategy for dealing with it. And so far it's had a pretty good success rate. Is I do think, it's like I was saying before, you know, people see you on the telly and they think you're rich and you're not real. You know, that there's this sort of, you live in this different world, that you somehow exist in this elite club, that we're all going to the same bars and we're all going to the same shops. And it's just not the case, you know. So I do try and remember that that's a perception people have. That's a perception I had before I was in this world. So I try and remember that, you know, people aren't thinking of you as the person you are. They're not trying to hurt you because they don't know you. And they're just, you know, might be frustrated. But no one who is happy and secure trolls anyone on Twitter, right? That's the bottom line. They just don't. You know, most of us, if we don't like something, we just don't like it. That's it. You don't find that person and tell them on Twitter. If you're doing that, there's something fundamentally not right in your life, you know?
Yeah.
So I try and remember that, that whoever these people are, they are definitely having a worse time than I am, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And but what I've started doing now, and I found it, so if I get trolled on Twitter and it's somebody who, you know, obviously isn't using their real name, doesn't have a photograph of themselves, they're obviously just a troll, then I just ignore them. But if it's somebody who's added me in a tweet and they use their own name and they've got their picture, I'll just challenge them on it now. I'll just go, hello, I'm Angela. Why did you feel you had to say that to me? That seems a little bit unkind. And I don't think a secure person would do that. Are you okay? And that's had
and
a...
How do they react?
Usually they come back and they're like, oh God, I'm sorry. Like, I shouldn't have said that. You know, because they realise that you're a person then. And then they've gone, you know, I sort of say, if you saw me in the street, would you have said that to me? Probably not. You know, sometimes they double down on it because they've been caught and they don't, you know, that's how you deal with being caught out sometimes, is you double down, you know, and those people can't really do much with. But there's quite a few times now when I just challenge it like that and they end up apologizing and deleting the tweet or sort of saying, sorry, I just hadn't really thought, you know, yeah. And you know, you have the ones who go, I'm entitled to my opinion. And I was like, yeah, you absolutely are. And you don't have to like me, but don't at me in it on Twitter, because that saying more about you than it is about me, that you felt
surely the reality of that is that and this has come up a few times, the reality of I just don't think these people ever leave their bedrooms, one, but also I think a lot of that is, you know, the reason they at you must be because they hope by atting you people are more likely to see that tweet and therefore they might get into conversations with other like-minded idiots and see who can try and attempt to be, in inverted commas, funny about somebody's appearance on the television.
Yeah. I mean, it is an attention thing. And that's why I don't interact with the ones that don't use their real names, because that is just goading. They're just goading you into a reaction and I won't give them the satisfaction. And that's why I never block anyone. I only ever mute them. So I can't see their, you know, then they can just shout it into a void for the rest of their lives and I never have to know about it. You know, I'll only do it if it's someone I think, you've just not thought this through.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And I'm just going to stop you now before you do it again. You know, they're the ones I'll interact with.
Do the positives of being on, I think, Twitter specifically, because I feel like that's where the biggest wasteland of disgusting hell of trolls really is, but do the positives far outweigh the negatives, so it's always worth sticking on it?
Yeah, I think so. I've had really lovely interactions with people on Twitter, you know, and in terms of getting people to listen to my podcast or to come to my shows or whatever, it's invaluable, really. And, yeah. you know what us comedians are like? What we do is when you're, even if you're at a gig, you can have 499 people enjoying the show out of 500, but you're going to look at that one who's sitting there stony-faced and wish they weren't there. You know, totally. And that's what it's like on Twitter as well. You can get as many people as you like tweeting you saying that they enjoy what you do and thanking you for what you do and all of that, but you're going to focus on the person who went, you're not funny. You know, that's just human nature. And I do think it's interesting with comedy because it is subjective, obviously. And so if you accept that comedy is subjective, which I think most people do, then you also have to accept that you're not going to like all comedy, right? Because it can't... No. You can't please everybody if it's subjective. So I find it phenomenally arrogant when people get angry that they didn't like your comedy, you know, and they'll say things on Twitter like, you're not funny. I don't think you're funny. What are you doing on my radio? You're not funny. And I'm like, right, you don't think I'm funny. That's fine. But how arrogant are you that you think all entertainment has to be aimed at your specific taste, you know?
Yeah.
There's comedy I don't.
Yeah, just like any form of, you know, the arts or creativity or anything, and certainly, you know, the age old one of nobody goes into that person's day job and pulls them out who doesn't, you know, a stranger, and slags them off for an email they just wrote or whatever.
Exactly,
it is a bizarre thing that's only come with social media.
But there's this sort of sense of entitlement that all entertainment has to be to your taste and for you, and if it isn't, then it's wrong. You know, but you can't. It's look, I'm not a big fan of, say, Mrs. Brown's Boys. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I would never slag it off because there are millions of people who love it. You know, you can't say it's not funny. You just can't, because people are laughing at it and buying the DVDs and watching the live shows. And so because something isn't your taste doesn't negate it as a piece of work, you know. Yeah. And I think people just don't realize that on Twitter.
Yeah, so just that's an interesting point. So there are some comedians, I don't think we need to name names, but we all know them, very, very big name comedians, who do openly go in on other artists, other comedians, during some of their work. What do you think makes them feel confident enough to do that and not think in the same way that you described, in terms of, you know, it being subjective and there being an audience for everybody?
See, I, you know, again, it's that same thing. I don't find that funny. As far as I'm concerned, all people who work in comedy are my colleagues of some description, you know? And so I would never openly slag off anybody in comedy. You know, I might not like what they're doing necessarily, but if it works, they've got an audience for it. It's not doing me any harm, is it? Why would I have you know, someone else's success isn't my failure. You know, it's not a zero sum game. So just let people do what they do and you concentrate on what you do. Otherwise you just drive yourself mad. And I think actually it's not, you know, there are certain quite high status comics. And that's the other thing as well. It never worked. I'm quite a low status comic. It never worked for me to be slagging off other comics. Who cares? You know, that's your persona. You've got this high status persona, whether it's who you really are or not. You know, you might use that as your sort of way of, or your excuse for saying the things you say or whatever. But I just think, look, we're all in this industry. We all know how bloody hard it is. Let's not make it harder for each other.
Totally. But it strikes me as interesting that those people who are doing that, so the, you know, the big name comedians who are slagging off other comedians to try and get laughs, that they, of course, are the same as all of us, that they need the affirmation, but it's almost like they're forgetting how that's going to affect that other performer, because we all want affirmation from our peers. So it just strikes me as kind of doubly mean in a way.
Just seems monumentally unkind and no need for it, if you ask me. And I just, you know, if you can sleep at night, well, that's up to you. I like people to like me. I like to like people, and I don't, you know, I just don't understand why you would do that for your own gains. But, you know, if that's what floats your boat, then good luck to you.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
Ange, it's been amazing chat. I'm just going to do some little, we have some quite kind of more quick fire questions towards the end. So if you can kind of come up with the first answers that come off the top of your head,
Okay.
I'm going to use, so these are based around being famous. You don't think you're famous, so I'll say being in the public eye, okay? So how is, what's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you because of being in the public eye?
Oh, well, I'd say the woman in the A&E reception who recognised me while I stood there with my tits wrapped in cling film. That was pretty embarrassing. Yeah.
The tits wrapped in cling film moment. Yeah, understandable. What's the best thing about being in the public eye?
Getting free stuff.
Such as?
I beer, largely, is what I get given. And I once did a tweet about, I'm a bit of a craft beer wanker. I like my ales. And I once just did a tweet about an ale that I was enjoying. And loads of it got sent to my agent. So I was like, this is brilliant. But yeah.
The moment that happens, doesn't that make you think I've got to start tweeting about other shit that I really want?
Oh, I really like Porsches. No, I'm not that. I can't. I find it very difficult to ask lots of people I know that, have a certain level of celebrity. Will ask for stuff, but I won't ask for it. No, but if somebody, offers it, then that's very kind.
Enough. And what's the worst? And what's the worst thing about being in the public eye?
Just having to remember not to pick your nose on public transport or anything like that, because people might recognise you and tweet about it. It's things like that. I'll walk along the street singing to my dog, and then I just think, oh god, one of these days you're going to end up, somebody's going to tweet a video of you singing at the dog down the street. You just got to have a little bit of, just in case someone does.
Yeah, totally. What advice would you give to someone who strives for your level of fame or public attention?
The advice I always give is just don't be a dick to anybody, right? Like, just be someone people want to work with, and then you'll be all right, I always think you have to be so super good at something for people to put up with you being a bell end, So if you're a good comic and you're a dick and there's another good comic who's nice, the person who's nice is going to get the job,
That's such a good way of putting it. The bell end comment is perfect. Who is the most famous person in your phone, Angela?
Probably Alan Carr.
Oh, yes. Very, very famous. Yeah. Okay. And I just want to know whether, before we go, just two more questions. One, do you strive for a level of, a bigger level of fame or public exposure or success? Is there a kind of level that you're aspiring to get to, or are you kind of happy where you are? How does your ambition work in that sense?
I really like where I am. I sort of, and I genuinely mean this, I think people think you're bullshitting when you say it, but you sort of forget that when you do telly, you're appearing in people's living rooms and they can see you. And I never did it to be famous. I like comedy and I wanted to be a comedian and I wanted to be respected for what I did, but I definitely wasn't like, I'm going to be the most famous. And actually, I quite like where I am now. I like that some people know who I am. Generally, people are nice to me. And, but I can still walk my dog and nobody bothers me.
Yeah.
That's perfect. A nice place to be at.
And therefore, I feel like I know the answer to this question, but I have to ask it format-wise. Final question, knowing all that it entails and with the benefit of hindsight, would you give up your level of fame/public exposure if you had the chance? By which I mean you get to keep your entire life, finances, security, fiancé, dog, but no one would ever recognise you.
Yeah. Definitely. I'd be happy with that. It's not about being recognized. If I was financially secure and satisfied in what I'm doing, then yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Angela, thank you so much. I want to give you the opportunity to plug anything you want. Now, tell us a little bit more about the We Are History with John O'Farrell as well. He's a friend of mine. So
lovely, John O'Farrell.
Go for your life.
We're both history nerds. I mean, John's written actual books about history. I haven't, but, we decided a couple of years ago to do a podcast together, and it's called We Are History, and it's on all good pod platforms. And all it is every week we take something from history that interests us and we chat about it in a hopefully quite funny way. It's not, a deep dive and it's not academic. It's just two reasonably funny mates chatting about stuff in history. So we've done things like Vlad the Impaler. We've done nudism in East Germany, spy pigeons, miners' strike, all sorts. So look that up.
Okay, and in terms of during the lockdown, where can people see you doing performing, or just the radio stuff that you were talking about before?
Yeah, News Quiz on Radio 4, which there's another few weeks of that left. So that's 6:30 on a Friday night on Radio 4. And then after that, I mean, it's anybody's guess, really. We're wading into the dark after that. But I am writing a book for Audible, an audiobook, which, well, I won't say when it should be coming out, because who knows in the current, you know, what'll happen about actually being able to record the thing. But look out, it'll be called The Ugly Truth, and it'll be coming out eventually.
Very cool. Anja, thank you so much for coming on Almost Famous. I've really enjoyed our chat. Guys, please do press that subscribe button on the podcast, rate it, and leave us a comment too. Find us on Instagram at Almost Famous the podcast, and on Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And until next time, thanks again for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.